Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mpati in Washington. Today is Monday, October 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo has held the first Congress of his new political party.
President Gbagbo spoke about Africa unity. He said Kwame Nkrumah and, some former president years ago was standing for justice and equality between people.
Eswatini government closes schools indefinitely, but the opposition says it is not enough. We'll speak with the biographer of the late Thomas Sankara. Today, Monday, is D-Day for unvaccinated Zimbabwe government workers and protest in DRC over the selection of the country's elections commission chair.
I believe that the Democratic Republic of the Congo has to assume its responsibility by reforming this arrangement which allowed the religious group to intervene in the political scene by nominating the head of the National Independent Electoral Committee.
And what would you do if you found a bag full of $50,000? We'll take you to Liberia for the answer. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ivory Coast, former President Laurent Gbagbo's Party of African Peoples, Cote d'Ivoire, the PPACI, held its first Congress over the weekend. On the line from Abidjan is Patrice Kouté, member of the new PPACI party.
President Gbagbo spoke about Africa unity. He said Kwame Nkrumah and, some former president years ago was standing for justice and equality between people. Africa continent should be only one continent. He also spoke about the African continent sovereignty and also the currency. I think we should actually try to do like a European Union. They are together, they built a currency to probably face off America, China, Russia.
Why does Mr. Gbagbo find it necessary to form a new party instead of going with the Ivorian Popular Front Party, the party that brought him to power almost 39 years ago?
President Gbagbo found it necessary to create a new party because the one he created 39 years ago was confiscated by someone called Afin Gesan. So the President Gbagbo wanted to avoid all the kind of conflicts. He was away for 10 years in jail in The Hague. He's now back in the country. He did not want to go back to the courts of Ivory Coast. So he decided to create a new one, more Pan-Africanism.
We understand that President Alassane Ouattara's ruling RHDP party sent a delegation to the Congress, as well as other parties from around the world. What does this mean for Mr. Gbagbo's attempt to return to power?
James, as you can see, President Gbagbo in Ivory Coast or either in Africa, he represents a kind of a union, you know. For the President Gbagbo, people must stand for justice, love, and equality between them. So after 10 years away, now he's back in the country, he wants to reconciliate all Ivorian people. That's why when he came, he went to visit President Ouattara and President Bédier. President Gbagbo is a kind of union between people here. That's what it is.
What's next after this Congress?
James, the next for President Gbagbo and his comrade is to now go to the north, talk to the north people of Ivory Coast. The next for the President Gbagbo is to go to the east and talk to the east people in the Ivory Coast. The next for the President Gbagbo is to go to the west, central, and the east and west to talk to everyone, to talk about reconciliation, to talk about the war is now over. Why can't we sit down and talk each other? You know, that is the main role for President Gbagbo nowadays.
Thank you so much, Patrice, for the opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you, James. That was really a pleasure to talk to you via your radio.
Patrice Kouté is a member of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's new Party of African Peoples, Cote d'Ivoire, the PPACI. You're speaking with us from Abidjan. As the trial of former Burkina Faso leader Thomas Sankara's alleged assassins continues in Ouagadougou, the ideals that Sankara stood for are back in the spotlight. Sankara, who was killed in 1987 after 4 years in office, was a Pan-Africanist and champion of national unity. Sankara biographer Brian Peterson spoke with Ricky Stryak.
In certain ways, there might be some people who have really high expectations in terms of the outcome. I'm not sure that real justice is going to be delivered. Blaise Compaoré is going to remain in absentia. The focus is really mainly on the Burkinabe side of things. In other words, the sort of internal plot. You know, there might be some revelations about the involvements of foreign powers, but it's unlikely that we're going to see anything like a smoking gun regarding, you know, France or Cote d'Ivoire or external political actors, although they certainly played a role. So it's exclusively focusing on the so-called internal plot. But that said, I think there are going to be new revelations, more details surrounding Sankara's assassination, as well as the 12 colleagues that were murdered with him on that day.
How does Sankara's story reflect Burkina Faso's story?
Sankara, he came to power with widespread support. It was certainly a military coup when he came to power August 4th, 1983, but it was supported by a broader social movement that had mobilized over the previous year. And you had, you know, periodic mobilizations of the population, the labor unions and students, mostly in urban areas. Peasants, rural peoples were not particularly involved in any of this until Sankara came on the stage. But I think what Sankara represented was the effort to create a state that was more responsive to the needs of the people. So after colonialism ended, you know, you had a series of sort of neo-colonial states that were in power that were largely supporting the interests of French neocolonial interests, as well as those of the political class. So finally, you had a political leader in Sankara and those around him who were listening to the concerns, the needs of people, to rural peoples, to urban workers, to students, to the youth.
You touched on this fact that, you know, he listened and reached out a lot more to the rural populations in the country. In present-day Burkina Faso, we're aware of the instability, the violence in the rural areas. A big role of that comes from the fact that the central government maybe wasn't meeting the needs of those rural populations. You know, this idea of reaching out to the rural populations, what is the application in modern day Burkina?
You know, I mean, Sankara was trying to construct a new sense of nationalism and national identity. As a revolutionary, the focus was on nation building and getting all peoples in Burkina Faso to buy into what they were doing, right? To be stakeholders in the building of this new country, which obviously had been renamed in 1984 to Burkina Faso. And I think that you know, as more and more power was taken away from the people, the political class in Ouagadougou, which after Sankara was mainly focused on self-enrichment under Compaoré, became less engaged in these more sort of development sorts of ideas of a more cohesive country, you know, in which regardless of your ethnic background, you were considered, you know, a citizen.
That was Brian Peterson, author of Thomas Sankara, A Revolutionary in Cold War Africa. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from New York. The leader of the Forces of Change political grouping in the Democratic Republic of Congo says it is time for the government to reform the arrangement which allows religious groups to nominate the head of the Independent National Elections Commission, also known as CENI. Noel Shiani says if the DRC government does not assume the leadership role in selecting the Electoral Commission chair, the country will continue to have issues each election cycle. The recommendation comes after majority of the religious grouping picked Denis Kadima as head of the Elections Commission, despite a disagreement from Roman Catholic and Protestant churches. Opposition supporters took to the streets on Saturday against Kadima's election, resulting in clashes with police.
Saturday's protest was organized by a political group led by Martin Fayulu. This group is called Lamuka. They protest against the neutrality of the people who were supposed to be appointed as members of the National Electoral Committee. They say that those people were not neutral, and consequently they were calling for organizing the process in a way to have people who are totally independent from the political establishment.
We understand, Mr. Chiani, that one of the reasons for the protests is that religious groups in the DRC are supposed to nominate the chair of Senate or the Elections Commission.
In my view, we've gone through this since 2006, since we start organizing democratic elections, and there has not been one head of the CENI who has been just accepted by the religious group and the state without any confusion. So I believe that as a country, the Democratic Republic of the Congo has to assume its responsibility by reforming this arrangement, which allows the religious group to intervene in the political scene by nominating the head of the National Independent Electoral Committee. And if we don't do that, in the future, we'll be running into the same difficulties over and over again. So the time has come for the country to revise the arrangement which allows the religious group to appoint the head of the National Electoral Committee. And what am I proposing? I am proposing that, like in many other countries, that function of organizing the election should be given back to the Ministry of the Interior. And we have to work with the national leaders, with everybody, the civil society, but also with the international community, to strengthen the capacity, the institutional capacity of the Ministry of Interior, so that it is up to organizing election which will be transparent and credible.
Noel Chiani is leader of the Forces of Change political grouping in the DRC and a former presidential candidate. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kinshasa. You are listening to Daybreak Africa and the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 18. The government of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, has closed schools indefinitely due to recent mass protests by students, public transport workers, and pro-democracy groups. Prime Minister Cleopas Dlamini says the government needs time to look into the students' demands. Tulani Maseko is the lawyer for two jailed members of parliament and another who is in exile. He says the protesters want citizens' participation in the selection of their prime minister and the release of the detained members of parliament, as well as the return of the third MP who is in exile.
It is important to say that the students and the children have made the call for the release of the MPs and the return of the third MP whom we are made to believe is in exile. That's their one demand. They have also said that the country must proceed from this undemocratic Ngunda regime into a multi-party presentation. So those demands are very fundamental. In our view, we think that it's not wise for the government to close down the schools simply because children and students are calling for transformation. We think that this country needs a way of engaging with the issues raised to find a permanent solution. And that solution can only come if we engage in a dialogue where we can discuss how we take the country out of this quagmire that we're in to a permanent, lasting solution under a democratic dispensation for Swaziland.
The prime minister, he announcing the closure of the school, I think he said that the government needed time to address the demands of the students and the transport union. What do you think?
I think it is a misdirection on the part of the Prime Minister to say that they need time to address the demands of the students and children and the transport union. The demands are the demands of the people of Swaziland as a collective. We have here political parties who have made it clear that this country is facing a governance and political problem. We have here the youth who have said the problem here is the education problem and the lack of jobs. We have here teachers who have said the conditions of employment are not conducive. We have the church, which has said very clearly that the problem that we are facing as a country needs us to sit down around the table and negotiate the future of Swaziland. It is not right, therefore, for the Prime Minister to say they will sit down and need time to address the problems raised by the students and the transport industry when everybody else has said the problem is the governance and political problem, which means that His Majesty the King must commission his government to engage in meaningful, you know, committed, genuine dialogue to address the political crisis that the country is facing. That's the only way the country can come out of the quagmire that it is in. We can't allow piecemeal, incremental approach. We just need to sit down and agree on the terms of engagement for the permanent future of this country and a democratic dispensation based on multi-party democracy and the rule of law in Swaziland.
Mr. Thulani, thank you very much.
Thank you so much indeed.
Thulani Maseko is the lawyer for two jailed Eswatini members of parliament and another on the run. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. Union leaders have angrily reacted to the Zimbabwean government's announcement on Sunday that workers who have not been vaccinated against COVID-19 will no longer be allowed to work and will not be paid. As Columbus Mavonga reports from Harare, the government's move is seen as part of efforts to deal with high vaccination hesitancy in the southern African country.
Dabadim Ginik Mangwana, Zimbabwe's Secretary for Information, over the weekend told government-controlled media that all civil servants who have not been vaccinated against COVID-19 will not be allowed to work come Monday.
There is no extension to the deadline of 15 October when civil servants are expected to all have been vaccinated, fail of which those who are not vaccinated would not be allowed to work. And further to that is the fact that those who are not vaccinated and those who are not working will not be paid.
School teachers, who constitute the largest proportion of Zimbabwe's civil servants, say the Friday deadline the government said was unilateral. Takawa Fira Joe is the president of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe.
Fundamentally, there was no agreement initially over the issue of vaccination. Our position as workers have always remained that we encourage our members to be vaccinated, but by no means should our encouragement be misconstrued for a mandatory vaccination. Our position is very clear that vaccination must be voluntary and not mandatory, and that we must invest in the efficacy of vaccination, explaining to members how vaccination would assist them in terms of boosting their immunity. But that has not been done.
Zimbabwe's government says it has fully vaccinated 2,472,859 people since the program started in February. Joe said Zimbabweans were shunning vaccination for several reasons that the government must first understand, from religious reasons to lack of knowledge about COVID-19 vaccines to lack of trust in the imported Chinese Sinovac and Sinopharm vaccines. He said all civil servants must continue coming to work while unions were considering going to court over purported dismissals. Zimbabwe's government, however, maintains it is providing enough resources in the fight against the pandemic. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
A Liberian teenager has won the praise of many after finding $50,000 and returning the money to its owner. As Rita Jilabwe reports from Monrovia, the teen is being celebrated as a national hero for his action.
18-year-old Emmanuel Tulo is a native of Nema County, one of Liberia's 15 political subdivisions. He became a commercial motorcycle rider at age 15 to help provide food for his family. Tulo says he found the bag of money by the roadside while returning from a trip on Sunday, October 10. He says he had goosebumps when he opened the bag.
Yes, we are coming from Slogan in Sagabia on our way to Tabernan. I found a bag on the ground and I checked inside. I see the money inside. Yeah, I went to the old man and I gave all the money. I thought they keep the money.
Tulo says a day later, his family heard a lady on a community radio station appealing to anyone in possession of the money to return it to her. Tulo says his guardian and other relatives accompanied him on a 30-minute journey to the radio station where the bag with the money was handed over to its owner. The teenager says some people criticized his decision to return the money, saying he should have kept it because it was God's blessing for his family. But Tulo says he has no regrets for his action.
I feel happy. Very money for me. And some people tell me, say, I'm crazy, I won't get rich in my lifetime.
Justina Gadi Tulo's aunt says she has raised Tulo since he lost his father at the age of 4. She says Tulo dropped out of school because she could not afford his school fees and the fees of her biological children.
Emmanuel started riding back 3 years ago. He was going to school, but he look at a family when my hair go down his foot in utter. I decided to go over motorbike.
Justina says she did not want to ruin her family's good reputation by holding on to the bag of money.
Myself say I was born and I see the kind of money before. They kind of huge amount of money. Why are carrying it? And then that say 2 days, it starts to hear over radio that someone money there for now. It starts to think that the money he talking about that the money he has. I carry carpet to the radio station, he return the money. Money one not for you, enough for you.
Musu Nyanse, owner of the missing bag of money, says her business would have collapsed if the money was not found. Musu says the money was packaged to send to her supplier in Monrovia, who usually gives her goods on credit. Rita Jrawe for VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with results from some marathon races held across various cities around the world, with African athletes dominating most of the races. Kenya's Elisha Rotich set a new course record en route to victory in the Paris Marathon on Sunday, while Tigist Mimuye led an Ethiopian podium clean sweep in the women's race. Elisha Rotich won in 2 hours, 4 minutes and 23 seconds, bettering the previous best in the French capital of 2 hours, 5 minutes, 4 seconds, set by Ethiopian Kenenisa Bekele in 2014.
Yeah, this is my wonderful time. This is my great time, my PB. So I'm so happy. I don't know what to say. I'm very grateful to Paris Marathon, Paris people. I just happy.
Ethiopia's Halimariam Kiroz finished second, and another Kenyan, Hilary Kinsembo, came in third. The women's race was claimed by Mumuye, who timed 2 hours, 26 minutes, 12 seconds to edge compatriot Yenisha Dinkisa by 3 seconds, with Fantu Jima rounding out the podium a further 7 seconds adrift. Elsewhere in the Netherlands, Kenya's Angela Tanui is the new Amsterdam Marathon champion. Tanui set a new course record after winning in 2 hours, 17 minutes and 57 seconds ahead of compatriot Maureen Chipkemoi. The Siena Marathon champion ran a tactical race before surging forward in the final stages of the race, running the fastest time on Dutch soil. In South Africa, Stephen Makoka won the 2021 Cape Town Marathon, crossing the line in 2 hours, 10 minutes, 1 second. South Africa's Stephen Makoka made it 2 wins from 2 starts at the 2021 Cape Town Marathon, making short work of a stellar international field that had 8 sub 2 minutes 10 seconds men in the field. In the wet city on Sunday, Simiu, running in her first ever marathon, finished in 2 hours 25 minutes 41 seconds. And now to football news. Cote d'Ivoire's ASEC Mimosas, Sudan's El Merrikh, and Angolan side GD Sagrada picked huge wins in their Total CAF Champions League second preliminary round first leg ties at the weekend. In Abidjan, host ASEC Mimosa came from a goal down to beat Algerian side Belzidad 3-1, handing themselves an advantage heading to the return tie away from home. while in Luanda, home side Sagrada, who were making a return to continental football for the first time since 2006, continued with their good performance, winning 3-1 against Leopards. Sudanese champions El Merrikh had to wait till the second half to open the floodgates of goals against Zanaco of Zambia to pick an important 3-0 victory that puts them in the driver's seat for a place in the group phase. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great day. And that's it for this Monday, October 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all our engineers, I'm James Batty in Washington, hoping that you